You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast to talk about all the Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today's episode, which is being dropped on Sunday, the 29th day of November 2020, we are going to be doing the Sunday Request, where I throw out the topic to you, my listeners, and I have two that I'm going to cover today. One that's been sitting in my email box for more than 5 years. Trust me, it'll make sense. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. And when you're staying at home, and please, please be smart, wear a mask, do the things we could do to help stop this thing. And one of the things you could do is you could tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen and Locked On Mets with Ryan Finkelstein. So, or is it Finkelstein? I always mess it up. Well, I do know you can also listen to Locked On Yankees with Stacy Gatsoulias, whose name I am pronouncing correctly. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball, and that's where I want you to send the Sunday requests to. You can follow me there on Twitter. Also, I'm on Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. So this is a tradition that I started with the old Sully Baseball Daily Podcast. I'm continuing right now in Locked On MLB. And during the off season, I'm going to be dropping podcasts Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday instead of doing them on Friday. So we can get a heads up here. The Sunday request. So I like to do that. I like just to sort of say, hey, here's a jump ball, you know, especially in the off season where sometimes finding a topic may not always be the easiest thing in the world to do. But I ask you all, what do you want me to talk about? I'll be more than happy to do it. And I have two that I'm going to cover today. Let's do the first one. And this is once again from Jeff Cohen at Jeff Cohen 41. I swear we're going to have to do a segment with Jeff because, you know, Jeff, you throw the best questions to me. You should be my producer. That's what I'm saying. Except that I produce the show. So stop trying to get my job. Just throw me these good questions. Hey, he requested today, would Omar Vizquel be in the Hall of Fame if he played for the Yankees, Cardinals, Red Sox, Cubs, or Dodgers? All right, I've always been a little, maybe it's because I grew up a Red Sox fan, I've always been a little bit leery of the whole team, you know, players who play for teams like that get more Hall of Fame consideration than others. We've seen borderline candidates with the Red Sox and the Cardinals and everyone not make it to the Hall of Fame. And we've seen some players who have had more questionable Hall of Fame credentials make it to the Hall of Fame without playing for any of those teams. So I've always been a little bit of a mindset where I shake my head at that mentality. I will say that Omar Vizquel has become the new controversial figure for Hall of Fame discussions for years and years and years. And did I mention years? It was Jim Rice. And Jim Rice fell short of a lot of the key stats that you look at, you know, in terms of evaluating for the Hall of Fame. He eventually made it on the 15th ballot. And I personally was thrilled. Why was I thrilled? Because Jim Rice was one of my favorite players growing up. I was a huge Jim Rice fan, and therefore he got in, and I loved it, and I understood every single argument against it, and to quote Voltaire, I didn't give a damn. I saw one of my favorite players get into the Hall of Fame, and I loved it. I loved it, and I think we're all fine. The earth has continued spinning. We're okay. After Jim Rice, the two cause celebs were the candidacy of Jack Morris and Tim Raines. And they eventually both got in. Tim Raines was voted in. Jack Morris was put in by a veterans committee. And then the next big, I guess, cause celebre became the candidacy, the surprise candidacy of Harold Baines, who nobody thought was a Hall of Famer. And everyone was just fine calling him a, you know, man who had a wonderful career, had a great baseball life, both as a player and as a coach, a beloved White Sox player, multiple All-Star, and suddenly became a Hall of Famer when nobody expected it. And as I said before, one of the sad things about that is that people began to talk about him in derogatory terms as a player, which I found kind of sad because he was a wonderful player. He had a great career. He played for a bunch of very good teams, played in the postseason with several clubs, a scandal-free career, but I thought fell short of the Hall of Fame. But evidently, this Veterans Committee felt otherwise. Now, there are some players who are on the Hall of Fame ballot who are going to have some interesting debates about them. I talked about players like Bobby Gritch and Lou Whitaker, two players who I think were both Hall of Famers, who fell off the ballot after one time on the ballot. I think eventually a Veterans Committee will come to their senses and put them in at one point or another. There tends to be that kind of corrections, whether you agree with it or not. But now comes Omar Vizquel's candidacy. And there's a controversy that has come about him. On the one hand, he had the reputation, notice how I'm phrasing everything, he had the reputation of being a great defensive shortstop. He wound up winning 11 Gold Gloves along the way. The Gold Glove is a horrifically unreliable metric for one's defense. As we remember, there was one year that Rafael Palmeiro won the Gold Glove for first base in a year where he played fewer than 40 games at first base. It was just a, hey, he's a good defender, right? Give him the vote, and there you go. He made a lot of highlight reel plays and had the reputation of being a great defender and doing so in an era when there was a lot of big sluggers. You know, he played for those Cleveland teams that were filled with mashers. He was doing it in the middle of the steroid era. And he also was doing it in the middle of what was an absolute shortstop renaissance. You had the three shortstops in the American League who in many ways redefined the position with Derek Jeter, Nomar Garciaparra, and Alex Rodriguez. You also had another MVP shortstop in Miguel Tejada. You had an incredibly productive shortstop and a wonderful career of Edgar Renteria. And then you also had Omar Vizquel, who made all the highlight plays. Derek Jeter and Nomar didn't make the highlight plays that Omar Vizquel made. So that was his reputation. And you know what? He wound up playing for 24 seasons and collecting, say with me, 2,877 hits. And a couple of years, he had tremendous offensive. He got 191 hits in 1999. He batted .333. He had an OPS that year of .833. And had 42 stolen bases for a Cleveland team that was filled with mashers. And that year, he finished in the MVP race at 16th, which was the apex of his spots on an MVP ballot. In fact, that was the only year he ever appeared on an MVP ballot where he did not crack the top 15. Now, this, of course, goes to one of the arguments against him is that in a grand total of zero of the seasons that he played over 24 years, was he considered an elite MVP caliber player, which when you go to the Hall of Fame, you probably should be in that. And this is where advanced metrics seem to be going against Omar Vizquel. Now, and I'm not a big fan of staring at WAR as a metric for, you know, the goodness or badness of a player, but he never finished in the top five of any season in wins above replacement. In any individual season, he was never considered a top five player. And I remember those years, and I always remember he was a terrific player on those wonderful Cleveland teams. And defensively, when he was matched with Roberto Alomar in a few years in Cleveland, that was about as good and up the middle as you will ever find on a baseball diamond. That being said, we're talking about the Hall of Fame here, which should be for the elite players. There have been all sorts of advanced metrics in terms of looking at his defense, which showed that, no, he wasn't a bad defensive player and he made great highlight plays, but there was actually, if you look at his defensive advanced metrics, he was not so elite to merit a discussion of Cooperstown. Now, it is interesting, I think, looking back at that wonderful scene from Bull Durham, and for those of you who want to hear me talk about Bull Durham, please subscribe to Bull Durham Minute, the podcast where I broke down the movie Bull Durham, 1 minute of screen time at a time. There's the wonderful scene where Crash Davis talks about if he just got one more hit a week during his career, he would have had a 300 average and would have been recalled to the major leagues. There's a similar thing going on with Omar Vizquel over his 24 seasons. He finished fewer than 125. He was 124 hits away. I'm sorry, 123 hits away from 3,000. 123 over 3,000. And over 24 seasons. Let's just do the math here for a second. 123 hits. He played 24 seasons. Let's say he got six more hits a year. Six more hits every season that he played. And when you consider in a full season, there's 6 months. So it's like one more hit a month. And he would have got 3,000 hits. 3,000 hits. He would have been part of the 3,000 hit club. And we would be having a much different conversation about the candidacy of Omar Vizquel. The discussion would be, is 3,000 hits the benchmark? This is the thing that I talked about with Harold Baines, because he also came tantalizingly close to 3,000 hits, but fell short. By the way, Baines and Omar Vizquel were teammates with the 1999 Cleveland Indians. Just a point of factor there. Now, I think Omar Vizquel will eventually get in. I do not think that the writers are going to vote him in, but there's a big, big advantage that's going Omar Vizquel's way in this particular Hall of Fame ballot. One of which is the fact that of all the first-time Hall of Fame votes, there is nobody that really stands out as a can't-miss candidate. Tim Hudson and Mark Burley both have interesting candidacies and maybe should stay on the ballot long enough to have a debate on it. But the Torrey Hunters and Barry Zitos and the Aramis Ramirez's of the world aren't getting to the Hall of Fame. You know that, and I know that. And you also know that there's going to be still a lot of people hand-wringing over Clemens and Bonds and Manny Ramirez and Gary Sheffield and Sammy Sosa because of their PED pass. And Curt Schilling, because he's a bit of an ass. And so there's going to be a desire to throw someone on the stage for the Hall of Fame. And Omar Vizquel had 52% of the votes. And there's no big name, you know, other than Schilling, Clemens, Bonds, Sosa, these people who under any other normal system and metrics would be considered instant Hall of Famers. That may give Omar Vizquel a boost just because he doesn't have the competition. Now, there is something that I will say regarding his candidacy, Jeff. If he had gotten the 3,000 hits, I think he would be in. I think a lot of people would be grinding their teeth and say, hey, you know, he's a Gold Glove defender, got 3,000 hits, let him in. I think one other thing would have let him in. one other thing. He would have gotten in if the Indians got those final outs in the ninth inning of Game 7 of the 1997 World Series. I absolutely believe that. If he was part of a World Series champion Indians team, then the whole aura of that run that they had between 1995 and 2001, of which he was part of each one of those teams, would be the Indians, who are irrelevant for generations, made all those postseasons, winning a couple of pennants, winning the World Series in 1997, and he was the wizard glove and sent it up the middle of the infield, blah, 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 and nearly got 3,000 hits along the way. That narrative would have got him in. Is it fair that Jose Meza wet the bed? By the way, Omar Vizquel and Jose Meza had a weird rivalry, of which Meza would always throw at Omar Vizquel over the years. But it should be Vizquel who's be mad at Meza. But is it fair that if Meza didn't wet the bed, or if Tony Fernandez, of all people, one of the most brilliant defensive shortstop I ever saw, and you could argue that Tony Fernandez had more of a Hall of Fame career than Omar Vizquel. At least he was considered one of the elite players of the game for a couple of years. He had a compelling argument to win the MVP in 1987. But he made a critical error in extra innings of Game 7 of the 1997 World Series, which opened up the floodgates for the game-winning rally. Is that fair? No. No, it's not. I do believe that if the Red Sox had won Game 6 of the 86 World Series, Jim Rice would have gotten on in the first ballot. And I think Dwight Evans would be in the Hall of Fame right now. Sometimes things are not fair. And I think the narrative of him being a part of a World Series champion in Cleveland would have got him in. It isn't fair, but sometimes fair's got nothing to do with it. So Jeff Cohen, I do think he's going to get in. I think a veterans committee will eventually vote him in because that's the way these things work. I think if he had the exact same career with the Yankees, and if the Yankees had won the World Series with him on his watch, he might have been in. Same thing with the Cardinals, Red Sox, Cubs, and Dodgers. If they had won a World Series with Omar as their shortstop and had the exact same career, yeah, maybe we're talking. But I think it had more to do with the narrative than it had to do with where he played. I have another Sunday request that I'm going to do. And as I said before, this one has been sitting in my email box for a while. Now is a good time as any to remind you that this episode is brought to you by Built Bar. You know, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. And they've got six great new flavors. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. They're also good for you. They're great if you're health conscious, you're trying to maintain or lose weight, which we're all trying to do after stuffing our faces during Thanksgiving. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great for the keto diet. One of my favorite new flavors is cookies and cream, which got 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 8 grams of sugar, 8 grams net carb. You get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. We've got a whole slate of new shows coming out this week. And check out some of the shows we did last week. I did a two-part interview with Dave Jordan, who is the author of the upcoming book Cobra, which is all about Dave Parker, one of my favorite players growing up, and his legacy, his rise, his fall, some of his health issues, and the fact that he was one of the most charismatic and devastatingly wonderful players from the 70s all the way through the late 80s, and even made an all-star bid in 1990. Check out those episodes with Dave Jordan, the author of Cobra. I was going through trying to find Sunday requests, see what people wrote, and I kind of did a little search on Twitter, and I saw one from Boston_Braves, Mike, who whose handle is Boston_Braves, sent me this on January 24th. January 24th, 2015. Yeah, I've been podcasting that long, the old Sully Baseball podcast, and I did the Sunday request then, and this is one that apparently he sent nearly 6 years ago that went unchecked, or if I believe it went unchecked. I went through my old archives. I do not see that I answered this. So he said, who would be my top five guests, living or dead, for the podcast? And I had to give this a lot of thought. I had to give this a lot of thought because this opens up living or dead, of course. And so I could actually think about what figures in baseball history I would want to have as guests of the podcast. And the first one is an obvious one because he lived an amazing baseball life. And anyone who saw the Ken Burns documentary saw what an incredible storyteller he is. And that's, of course, Buck O'Neill. I'm not saying that for politically correct reasons. I'm saying because he's a great storyteller who saw a lot of things, both in the Negro Leagues and as a member of the Cubs organization. I just would love to hear him tell some of the stories that he didn't include in the Ken Burns documentary, including some of the stuff about Satchel Paige and some of the, he tells a couple of stories that in the documentary that show his Satchel Paige's humor and showmanship and also some of his humanity. And I have a feeling there's a couple of R-rated stories too that I would kind of want to hear. You know, I was going through and I was thinking about some of the ones that you would think I would say, some of the big, larger-than-life characters like Yogi Berra or Babe Ruth or Satchel Paige or Dizzy Dean or Reggie Jackson. And I kind of feel like I wouldn't want them. No, let me get this straight. If someone resurrected Babe Ruth and said he wants to be on the podcast, yeah, I'd find time to interview him, okay? But that being said, this is a dream situation. And I have a feeling that some of the players who have those sorts of auras about them would want to almost play up their persona. I mean, it was the thing that Buck O'Neill said about Satchel Paige is that he played up a little bit of how the media wanted to talk to him when he presented himself. And it may make for an affected interview and not what I want to see. I think Babe Ruth would always be on. Reggie Jackson would always be on. Dizzy Dean would always be on. Yogi Berra, you'd almost be hoping he would say a Yogiism. And so I would hold off on any of them. Again, if they, you know, if Reggie wants to be on the podcast, by all means, I have him on. I've actually had a couple of people on the podcast, the old Sully Baseball podcast, former players and current players. Sean Doolittle has been on a couple of times. Very, very nice, cool person, and a really fun interview. And he talks about very honestly and openly and funny about his baseball time and baseball career. I had the great Ellis Valentine was a guest who talks very honestly, does not care what people think, and was very sweet and gracious and funny and open and told great stories about his time with Montreal and his time and more tumultuous times with the Mets. I had a wonderfully sweet man by the name of Rudy May, who played for the New York Yankees and the Orioles and several other teams. And you would have thought I had known him for years. He was so just friendly and giving. So I would want to have people like that. I've had the great pleasure of being in a documentary and a feature film about Bill Lee. Both were called Spaceman. I got to converse with Bill Lee a few times. And I would love to have Bill Lee as a guest on the show. I guess there's two, Buck O'Neill, Bill Lee. Another great subject of a documentary, if you watch the film No-No, a documentary, which is about Doc Ellis. Doc Ellis is an unbelievably interesting person, very open and honest. Of course, he died several years ago, but this is living or dead. So he would be number three for me. Part of me might want to say Billy Martin, but I also feel that Billy Martin might be affected as well. If we're going to go back into history, I would say John McGraw. John McGraw would be my fourth one. John McGraw was one of the great managers in baseball history, and I would just want to pick his brain about what was happening in baseball at the time, and also the fact that he was, in an odd way, more progressive as a manager. He wanted to integrate baseball really, really early, and he studied Negro League baseball and wanted to sign several of the players. But he also was this brawling, sometimes faced Irishman who was tough and wanted to manage the Giants to the top every single year that he was the manager there, and is in the short list of greatest managers of all time. People like John McGraw, Earl Weaver, Leo DeRocher, these are all people I would love to just pick their brains. I think John McGraw is such a fascinating character in baseball history that he would be in my phantom interviews for the podcast. And the final one is, God, I wish I could have him. And this was actually the first name that popped in my head. And it is the man who I think was the greatest announcer in baseball history and was a player as well. And someone who I love to listen to the old games that he broadcasts. And I love listening to how he would, be either when he did color commentary or did play-by-play. It was just, it was magical to me. And he also was so funny and had so many stories to tell. And my God, he just was perfection. And that was Joe Garagiola. And it's funny, there's a lot of people who heap praise onto Vin Scully as he was the greatest announcer this, greatest announcer that. And someone asked me when he retired, do you think that Vin Scully was the greatest announcer of all time? And my response was, when he did the NBC games for the World Series, he wasn't even the best announcer in the booth, that he shared the mic with Garagiola. That's not a slight on Vin Scully, but Garagiola was the best. He was the funniest. He had the pedigree of being involved with some really, really wonderful St. Louis Cardinal teams and playing for several other franchises along the way. He was the announcer for so many great games, had so many great observations, had such a funny point of view of the game, but it wasn't shtick. Do you understand what I'm saying? I would not feel that he would be putting on an affectation. Some players who are really funny in baseball, whether it's a Kevin Millar, whether it's a Brian Wilson, whether it's a Dizzy Dean, someone like that, I would be afraid would be putting on airs, almost putting on a show. And Joe Garagiola just struck me as a guy who would just want to tell great baseball stories. And so that would be my dream list of people. Buck O'Neill, John McGraw, Bill Lee, Doc Ellis, Joe Garagiola. All talking to your pal Sully on this podcast. I would love that. But in order to do some of those, I'd have to bust out a Ouija board. And believe me, if I could get John McGraw, Buck O'Neill, Doc Ellis, and Joe Garagiola on the podcast, that would be front page news. So, hey, it took me a long time to get to that Sunday request there, Mike, at Boston_Braves. Hopefully it was worth the wait. And for everyone else, you can go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. You can like us on all the social media platforms. If you want to have me do a Sunday request, please, this is the off season. I need as many topics as you can. Throw them my way at Sully Baseball. Follow this podcast, Locked On MLB Pod, also on Twitter. I almost called it Twister. Doing Sunday requests here on the 29th day of November 2020. This has been Locked On MLB. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.